Two insecure critics must fight for their right to validate their existence.
In this corner, we have a dinosaur. For some reason.
In this corner, we have a voodoo priestess that chose Pokemon Go over voodoo, sometimes called Eevee.
It's time to pick sides. This is Haunted MTL's Throwdown, with contributors Eevee and J.M. Brannick.
I do love destroying you.
You haven't got the guts.
Hello, welcome to the Throwdown with your hosts, Eevee / Voodoo Priestess, and myself, J.M. Brannick. I do know my name, and aka Box Human as well. Hello. You say now hello.
Hello.
Very nice.
Hello.
This is a thing of something, something, and something, and something. We fight and stuff. So this episode is cursed. See? It's cursed.
It is. It's like a magical curse, too. It's like The Exorcist and...
So I was, like, thinking, oh, at 9 o'clock, this is the time to go. I get a text from Eevee and was like, so I'm ready to go. How about you? And I'm like, I am not. I have dye in my hair. I'm making dinner. I was just talking to my brother and this and that. So I was like, well, shit. I'm like, okay, let me get my life in order. Because I tell everybody, I am old. I have old person memory. I cannot remember things. So I go and get like all my alcohol and all of my glasses that I can carry. And I come to bring it upstairs and I trip on the couch and it falls on the floor. Trying to pick that up. And then I come up here and I was going to use my mouse as people do. And the battery died as soon as I clicked on something. And so then I had to go find a battery. So this episode is cursed, brought to you by the curse, the grudge. No, Noroi. Yes. Noroi the curse. That's right. That was actually a good movie. But anyway,
It was.
But that is not the movie we're here to talk about today. Today is my pick. Also, just letting you know that all of our thoughts are our thoughts. We are not controlled by overlords in any state or fashion.
Well, sometimes Google.
That's everyone's overlord. It is our savior. Yeah. It tells us things we need to know. So, but all of our thoughts are our thoughts. If we say something to offend or anything like that, we apologize. I don't think this one's going to be too offensive. But I can always start that, you know, going to a different direction.
My last point, it might be a little offensive.
Okay. Well, maybe. But anywho, so my pick this week was The Reanimator. And I do have notes. So The Animator was from director Stuart Gordon, which unfortunately he actually died not too far away from our date right now. He died this past March in 2020 at the age of 72. He actually made some of my favorite movies growing up and now, such as Dolls. Dagon. Yep, he did. And he did Dolls, which I love as an adult. And as a child, I love Honey, I, you know, did stuff with the kids. All that.
You might want to reword that.
I did stuff with them, not to them, with Rick Moranis. So he was a phenomenal director, and sadly, he has passed away. Also in this movie was phenomenal actor David Gale, who died in 91 during open heart surgery. He was only 54. And he was a tremendous actor, wonderful protagonist in this film. And we're going to miss both of these stars because they are phenomenal. period. The end. I win.
No, that's not how this works.
Ah, shit. Okay. All right. Well, do you want to start off with your little trifles and trifles and...
Yeah. My first thing is, this movie is cursed, and Box Human just gave all her points as to why. And now I'm going to give my points. So I had this movie on DVD, but it was available on Shudder, allegedly, because the freaking video wouldn't load, and it was like the only video that wouldn't load for me. So I go to find my DVD. I had to dig it out.
Oh, no.
The disc is all scratched up. I couldn't watch it. So I go to Amazon Prime, and it's like, because I saw it on Amazon Prime, it's like, it's not available on Amazon Prime at this point, and it's like, you can pay $1.99 to rent it. So I click on that to go there, and it takes me to the thing where it's like $2.99 to rent, and it's like...
You had to work really hard for it.
I did, but I just ended up getting like a Showtime thing, a free trial of Showtime for it to be free. Like,
why didn't you just buy it again?
Because...
That's my counterpoint. Just buy it again. It's worth it. I would buy this four times. I would buy this four times, this movie, for the reasonable price of...
$12.99.
Yeah, $12.99.
Yeah, that was how much it was.
It's just that good. You need to get yourself another DVD. Because this is what happens when people think they can just stream everything. See, we DVD people, we know that these streamers are just dreamers. They think that it's always going to be there. It's not. That's why you need your DVDs, your generators, and your DVDs. I'm a prepper for watching old movies. Nothing else. Just watching old movies. I don't have water. Fuck that. I don't want to live. I just want to watch movies until the end.
And be sure to decide to buy movies over toilet paper.
Yes. Oh, yeah. For real. Don't buy toilet paper. That's dumb. That's what leaves are for. There's tons of those outside.
That is true.
And grass. I mean...
Sticks.
Sticks are a little bit more difficult. Heck, you know, it's really nice. You can go up to, like, you know, a McDonald's or something, and if you go there with your pants down and say, I need some toilet paper, they will call the police for you, and they will help you. I found that out a couple times. So, there you go. That's all you need. So, that is my counterpoint. You're weak. Buy the movie again.
Okay. And let's go to your first point as to why it's such a great story.
Oh, okay. My first point. I forgot which order I had these in. Again, it's a cursed podcast. I blame Evie / Voodoo Priestess.
Yeah, I tried to do some voodoo to curse some Brannick, but it turns out that you can't just randomly substitute things.
Yeah. Sucks for you. All right. So my number five was in pro of this movie. The style of the movie and the effects were visually beautiful and gross and fun and lovely and satisfying. I mean, just, it was so great because it took place in a hospital. So you get this like that drab greenish color with this red blood. And there's so much blood in this movie. So gross blood. It's like, it's all colors of blood too. It's like that dark kind and the really red kind. And there's some where it's like they throw the brains across the floor or across the wall and it sticks there for just a second. It's just, it's visually, and just the style is just from word go, when you're watching the beginning credits and they're just rolling out to this beautiful little scene where it's all these pictures of, you know, the brain and the head and things like that. And just it has such energy to it that it is just so fucking enjoyable and just satisfying and just wonderful to watch. Okay.
So there is one point about all that blood and stuff.
Yeah.
The blood comes from basically everyone. And even though it's about zombies and stuff.
Reanimated, not zombies. The reanimated. Sorry.
So anyway, yeah. So anyway, not for their
zombies,
right? They're reanimated that just are mindless and eat people. They kind of do.
They don't. They just throw people around.
They bite, like they bite and they like chew on organs and stuff. I saw multiple times of that, like the one guy getting his fingers bitten off.
That's because the fingers were in his mouth.
Okay, well, what about...
If somebody throws their fingers in your mouth, you're going to bite them.
What about when the guy, like, summoned his army? Like, the headless dude summoned his army. One of them pops out of the bag, like, chewing on an intestine.
I think it was stuck in his throat, and he was trying to get it out.
Okay, anyway, for all the blood and stuff in this... you would expect everyone to die, and not everyone dies. Like the Dan Kane guy, he gets thrown around by the dad dude. And there's blood all over the wall. It almost looks like there would be brains behind him, but he's still alive and able to run around and stuff.
Does get a concussion at one point though. He does. And Wes looks at it and says, "You're okay." And they're doctors, so they know. They don't need an MRI. They don't need medical equipment. They just know. It's a gut feeling. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and there's also visuals of pencils snapping. Is that fun and exciting?
Yes. Actually, I wrote that down. Yes, I did. I wrote that down. It was a very tense moment. I loved it. I'm going to start doing that when I don't agree with like my boss in a meeting. I'm just going to bring a shit ton of pencils, just snap them.
Yeah, I thought that was okay. That was kind of like funny that the dude was like taking that so personally. Just like snap, you can talk over that snap.
Is that you? Is there ice cream? There's ice cream. Oh, that's right. You're in the middle of a heat wave. Oh, man. I bet they have, like, really disgusting Spider-Man pops that don't look anything like Spider-Man.
They do, but honestly, all the ice cream trucks that drive in our neighborhood are kind of sketchy, so we don't really get them anymore.
Oh, can you get, like, drugs from them, too? Like, drugs on the ice cream?
I don't know. I've never asked.
Good, sir. I would like some Molly on that. Thank you. Anyway, so your point was... that I win, right?
It's unrealistic, and that was my point, that the effects are unrealistic.
Well, to be fair, have you ever seen that happen in real life?
Pencil snapping?
Yes.
I actually did when I was little, because I thought that made me the coolest bitch ever, that I could just snap a pencil with my bare hands.
Yeah, but did you do it, like, to your teacher, like, in a conflict of wills? In a tense conflict. You should try.
So unrealistic.
All right. Let's go to your number four.
Okay. Bitch Boy is in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Now, when you said that to me, I didn't understand what was going on. So could you clarify that?
Yes. That cat named Rufus. Imagine. At the end of Sadako versus Kayako, Sadako grabbed Toshio and pulled him into the TV. He got sucked into the reanimator. The reanimator was the VHS thing that was taped over by Sadako's shitty movie, because you have to record movies over to, like, you spare people from The Grudge and everything, even though it didn't actually do it. But whatever. And then, now that Toshio is a cat in the freaking reanimator movie, he's just being a little bitch. He's, like, jump scaring people who are having sex in bed. He's, like, knocking stuff over. He's a dead cat in the fridge. And then when he gets reanimated, what does he do? He jumps on people's backs and tries to kill them.
I did like the setup and payoff that he jumps on people's backs.
I was very confused that the continuity was there. Because, like, Kayako versus Sadako had no continuity. And then gets pulled into the reanimator and there was continuity, but still.
Okay, so here's my read on it. This is just another cat. This is not a Japanese meowing boy. It's not about a possessed ghost house curse. In fact, it's just a rather ordinary cat doing ordinary cat things. And don't expect it to tango anymore because its back is all broken. But other than that, it is a completely, utterly ordinary cat.
An ordinary cat that you expect to tango when you don't expect it to?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm going to say I won that point.
All right. Your first one. Your first point. Good job. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I did it.
I'll give you a certificate in the mail. All right, let's go to my point, which I forgot again.
The cast and acting are top notch.
Oh, yeah. The casting and the acting are top fucking notch. Yeah, you didn't say fucking notch. I will do that. Yes, they are amazing. I mean, Jeffrey Combs' West is phenomenal. It is great because he's unhinged and yet charismatic. And I loved talking about the cat on the back. I loved his body work in that, especially because it could have easily have gone south. It could have been so over the top that it didn't resonate with people. But he pulled it off. Like, to me, I was like, ah, there's a fucking cat on his back. I mean, it could have easily have been something that was just too goofy, too out of the realm to even continue, but he pulled it off and he continued to pull it off. He's done a lot of Star Trek work afterward, which is just a tiny jump from horror, but he still continues to do horror to this day. He's doing a lot of voice work. I'm glad he's still in it. I'm not going to really talk about the other reanimators. Barbara Crampton as Meg. Oh my gosh. So Barbara Crampton is amazing. She was in Chopping Mall. She was recently in Your Next and did a really, really, really good job in We Are Still Here. And I get it, like the babes and monsters thing, the bubes and the blood. And I'm tiptoeing that line, but she was and is just a beautiful woman. She did 3 tit scenes and 1 pretty much full scene in this. And it was beautiful and it was bold. And that scene really worked because of her nakedness and her vulnerability. And also, I just want to say that she did a Playboy in 86 with the theme of horror and sexuality. So I say hats off to her. You know, that's really bold, especially for, I feel, women. Some might disagree, but making sexuality and horror on the front line was an interesting choice, and I hope it was a good experience for her. And then Bruce Abbott was married to Sarah Connor for a while, but is now married to the Independence Day actor Kathleen Quinlan. The other Independence Day from 83, and that one involves blowing up a house to kill a domestic abuser. But he's been in movies and guest appearances on TV shows. I would have liked to seen him a little bit more in things because I thought he was really fun in this role. And like I said before, sadly with David Gale, he passed, but he was a phenomenal protagonist in this film. He was creepy. He was sinister. He had a huge fucking head that was just great. It was just there. And everybody was just top fucking notch. And whoever did the casting on this did a great job. That's my point.
So for the Meg Crampton thing, I'm going to put a pin in that because that kind of goes into my last point.
Sure.
Yeah. But my response is probably going to be this point, that how everybody was creeped out by Herbert. His name was Herbert, wasn't it? But
West. I kept calling him West because it was fun to say West.
Yeah. But so one of the things in the movie was we knew that Herbert West was a very intense guy who was very bound to his work and stuff, but nobody else knew that. Nobody else was there when we saw his mentor's head basically blow up on him.
Oh yeah, we kind of didn't talk about this movie. We usually talk about a little bit about the movie before we jump right in. And we kind of jumped right in. This is because it's cursed.
This
podcast is cursed. But yeah, Okay, continue. Sorry.
Oh, no problem. So everyone thought he was creepy and everyone was really bothered by him and nobody really wanted to give him a chance. And they were like, or dealing with him was like giving him a chance or something. And it's like, why? As far as you people know? And what do you mean you people? Yeah, I mean you people, you academics, you smarty pantses.
Well, he was just a dude. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry to the academics in this crowd. I'm so sorry. Continue.
It's okay. We did a disclaimer at the beginning.
I'm so sorry. I'm just so sorry. Okay.
I'm edgy. But,
she's a terrible human being. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
So I just thought it was weird how very clingy, or not clingy, but how stuck they were on the idea that there's something wrong with him before there was any proof that something was wrong with him. Like, come home and there's a dead cat in your freezer. His excuse for not mentioning there's a dead cat was, oh, dead cat, details later, I didn't want to leave that note for you, my bad, was just so very weird because, I don't know, that looked like a personal fridge.
They didn't have pagers back then. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have ways of communication like that. Would you want somebody to like leave a message saying, hey, kitty cat died with a glass on its head? No.
I would like a more believable excuse.
He's a weird dude and he does things a little bit weird, but it was all in the best interest.
And I believe that. It's just that, like, as far as anyone else knew, that is true, but it doesn't make sense that everyone was so skeeved out by him because we knew stuff that they didn't know. And that's why we're like looking at him all like, you sketchy.
I'm gonna put a pin in that too.
This is where the battle starts.
Like, we have just so many fucking pins and everything.
Okay. Next thingamabob.
Next is something else, which is thing that I did.
The epitome of a mad scientist movie.
Yes, thank you. It is. It's such a great epitome of a mad scientist movie. It is a pure and utter delight of a film that gives you everything you crave in a mad scientist reanimation story. It's got gore and body horror and desperation and scientific license and passion and curiosity and pushing boundaries. And it's just such a delight to see because it has all of these things wrapped so wonderfully into it. I would have loved to see more with West, to see a little bit of why he was so passionate about this. But I didn't need it. I really didn't because it was like, okay, dropped in. I get it. You know, he's willing to give up everything for his work, putting a pin in that. And, you know, it's so nice and fun and refreshing. And it's just, if you like scientist-y movies, I do. It scratches like every itch. All right. That's mine.
And my next point is that this movie rips off scenes
you gotta do your counterpoint.
This is my counterpoint. The movie rips off scenes from other movies. You can't say it's the epitome of a movie and then just be all like, well, guess what? Most of these scenes I've seen better elsewhere.
Homages. But go on. Okay, like what?
Let's go. The reanimated, they're basically zombies.
They're not zombies, though.
They're basically zombies.
They're not zombies.
They're not, but they basically are.
Don't rip off my stuff. They're not zombies at all. They are reanimated corpses. They are, well, how do you expect a reanimated corpse to act?
Hi, my name is Paul.
Well, he was getting closer to that. See, that's the thing with science. You have to keep testing it until it works. And he was getting closer with that.
Was he, though? Because it kind of seemed like his whole thing was, if you can defeat death, you can bring people back. But it looked like to actually bring people back, you had fucking to bring them back pretty much immediately, like before the brain death occurred, which means that his whole thesis for not disrespecting the creepy raper dude.
Allegedly.
Alleged. He never got around to it.
But he was close.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
That was so uncomfortable. But anyway.
Again, she was such a great actress. Anyway, go on.
His whole reason for doing this, it didn't seem to actually be going anywhere. But
going anywhere? It was making reanimated people. Where else do you expect it to go?
I expect reanimated people who are actually people and not zombies.
Yeah, and he was getting closer to that. What's his face? Dude of Hill could talk. He could think. He could move. He could...
He was a severed head.
He could manipulate other zombies. I mean, like, he was getting close. It just wasn't... It wasn't correct yet. He needed more time. He needed more subjects. And serum. I mean, like... That serum probably isn't the end-all be-all. He probably has to tweak it, you know? It's just, this is very new in his whole process. So, zombies, not so much. Reanimated corpses that have very limited capacity of brain function, yes. Because they were talking about, they're not zombies. They are alive in a way. Their hearts beat. Their bodies do things. It's just not the same way that our bodies do things or our hearts beat.
So the next scene I'd like to talk about that they ripped off. After they have sex and the guy is under a blanket, that's a ripoff from Halloween.
I think Halloween probably ripped that off.
No, it's timey wimey, wibbly wobbly, whatever thing. It's
Then it's homage.
What about that scene where he grabs an axe? That's probably a riff off of The Shining,
or an homage of The Shining,
or just Rufus the cat, Kayako versus Sadako.
Well, yeah, that's a rip off. Straight up, honestly, I'm surprised you didn't talk about. And this one, I would. In my notes, I put, the music is utterly, utterly original without homage or inspiration, because that would be a nightmare lawsuit, one would imagine, but apparently not. I'm surprised you didn't talk about the music.
The music?
Yeah. The music that is, like, pretty much beat for beat Psycho, except with a couple differences. Yeah. And apparently it never went to court, so... That I would have given you a point on, but you didn't bring it up. So I can't give you that.
Don't forget the music from Psycho.
Oh, shit. All right. Well, fuck. I gotta give you that point. You got any other scenes?
When he's carrying her out of the elevator, he's carrying her like a creature carry.
Oh, yeah. Well, that actually, I am gonna stick to, that was homage. That... Clearly from like the monster movies of the 50s, the 40s and 50s, that
homage,
definitely
ripoff.
That is an homage. The other ones I'm not so sure about, but that definitely was homage, and in a clever and a cute one too. It was a great little nod to the horror movies of the past, especially the creepy scientist and monster comes to life. It was beautiful, beautifully done.
And let's go to your next point.
Okay. I'll give you a half point for that, just because of the Psycho music. All right. My next point is that it's an actually funny horror movie. It has such clever writing and acting that the jokes land. They're not unintentional. They're very intentional. But the emotional beats land too. So it's not, if you're looking for like a cheesy, so bad it's good, horror movie, this really isn't it. This is actually a legitimately funny horror movie with good acting and, like I said, clever writing. I mean, just watching Hill, his body bumble around and his head just giving this, like, what the fuck is wrong with you face is just hilarious. And again, like, there's just so many scenes that could have gone south if it weren't for the tremendous direction and the acting that was involved in it. It could have been something that was completely silly, that wasn't taken seriously, but it pulled itself together into this beautiful little just gem. And again, I chuckled. There were points that I laughed, and again, not because it was like, oh my God, That was horrendous. That was a candelabra being thrown through a dog, like in Ghost House. It wasn't like that at all. It was clearly intentional, and it was very good. And that's rare for horror movies to actually be funny sometimes.
Yeah, it's rare to be intentionally funny in the way that you mean it to be funny.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I'm probably just going to have to give you this point because there's no argument I can really make. Like, just the acting, the timing of things, it was just so on point, man.
It was good. It was good direction. It was good editing. I mean, like, it was a good, funny horror movie. And man, it's refreshing to see that. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of them where they're supposed to be funny and you're just like, oof.
Yeah, try hard is the worst thing you can do in horror.
And comedy is the first thing that ages. And this didn't age. It had a lot of classic gags that just won't age because it's just classic humor.
And so. It's kind of a quotable movie.
Oh, God, yes.
My favorite funny part in it is when that officer dude keeps comes back at the end, and he's just like looking at this severed, this headless body running around. Then he kind of just stares into the room, and then he
mouths like, "What the fuck?"
Flips it out of there.
And there's just like little tiny little moments like that. It's just that make it just clever, but not overly so. They don't overly gag it. You know, the gags are tightly knit into it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, you have to take that point because there is no point in there where I can really go, well, it did this stupid, it did this, it like screwed up and made it awkward. Speaking of awkward, we're going to go to my final point and take that pin out of the thingy. So my
out of that thingy?
Yeah.
That my last cordy thingy?
Real complaint is the weird nature of consent. And that's because like consent and stuff in this film is actually, it's like a running theme. Like a lot of this has to do with Meg Crampton's character, or what was her name? And the actor?
Meg was her acting name. And then Barbara Crampton is her actual name.
Yeah. So Meg in the movie, she doesn't really have a lot of agency. And this is what I mean kind of by the weird nature of consent is the first instance I kind of, like, I just thought back on it after watching the entirety of the movie, you know, where they're, like, making out in the school, and she's like, no, no, and then it switches them having sex, and she's like, yes, 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 and I was, mm-hmm. And it's like, that kind of carries through a tone throughout the movie, because she's engaged to this guy, and her dad does not know about him. Like, she will not tell her dad that she's having a relationship with this dude, because she doesn't want her dad to do anything bad to him. She has this creeper Hill all up and over her. He has a really weird toast.
I wrote this toast down because I was like, wow.
I think that toast is the one where it made me turn on the subtitles for the movie.
I don't have all of it, but part of it is he's like toasting to her beauty and brilliance, and too bad for basically all the people that fall under the obsession of, oh, blah, 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 and the obsession of the all who fall under her spell.
Yeah.
Right in front of her dad. Yeah.
I guess because they're not living together, if she doesn't get a say in the guy's choice of a roommate, but also her fiance completely ignores what she says about this roommate because she's feeling skeeved out by him. It's also the consent in the fact that these dead people, some of them like straight up murdered, they don't really get any sort of consent to be brought back to life. And this kind of ties into the end of the movie, spoilers, where Meg dies, Meg is almost raped back to life, even though it's kind of obvious she would not want that to happen to her, because you fucking look at the shit that's going down in the basement, what sane person thinks.
Well, so when I say all that happened to her father too.
But what I'm saying is that like she has no agency, and it's like things happen to her and she's not allowed to do anything about it. She gets no real say. Like, even though you were talking about the sexual portrayal that she did and how that was really strong, it's also done in a very violent rape thing where her father basically ties her, straps her down because she's being gotten controlled by Hill, who, by the way, has a creepy stalker collection in his drawer of where he just takes her napkins and her tissue or her fucking hair and all that creepy shit, and he just keeps it. And their father takes off all her clothes, and Hill has his severed head, and he does creepy and bad, no bad bueno, no bueno things to her. He almost, oh. But anyway, Meg is basically a trophy throughout the entire story. And I don't feel like the movie does much to actually go above and beyond or to give her any sort of power at the end of it. So this is my only really actual serious bad point about it, is that there is this thread throughout the entire movie about consent and choices and all that. And she doesn't get any, really. That one scene, when she's all mad because they basically brought her father back as a zombie. He got lobotomized. And her fiance comes back and she's like, maybe you should just go away. Go to a different town. And she's like, I tried so hard to stop loving you, but it was no use. And then going for the kiss and all that. And it's like,
she said, I tried so hard to hate you.
Yeah. But that's just it. Again, it's like, she has very legitimate reasons for like not ever wanting to speak to him again. He fucking, not only was he involved with the murder of her father, he brought him back into a mindless zombie thing, and that was just a hard and disgusting thing to look at. And it's like all these little bits, you see what I'm saying? I feel like I should have wrote this all down so I could have explained it better.
Nope. My point. No, I'm just kidding. No, actually, those are some really good points. And the point of consent is something that I wasn't even actually really thinking about with this movie, especially the point of consent with Meg, kind of, yes. Well, it's kind of hard not to. Just going to say it, decapitated cunnilingus, you know?
I was trying not.
I'll say it. That's what was going on. And again, I put in my notes, big award to the actress for this scene. Half naked, cold, nips tongued by dead creeper with a big head. Because that's what she had to do. And when I was talking about like empowerment and sexuality, I was talking about the actress, hopefully. You know, again, you know, you always hear about actresses being pressured into things. So I hope, it is my hope that she was not. And these were decisions and choices that she had made. In my notes, I have, this movie hates Meg. It's at the expense of Meg, and we are not really meant to identify with her. And it's true, because she's called a bubble-headed co-ed. You know, she's often dismissed. Her father, at one point, tells her to basically sit down and shut up and has somebody else watch over her. And you're right, she doesn't have any agency. It would be a great movie idea to see something like this through the lens of her. If anything, she is the biggest victim of the entire movie because she has lost everything. She lost the cat, she lost her fiance, she lost her father, and in the end, she lost her life and agency. So that is really interesting, which is kind of funny because she is such kind of a background and bland character. She did have really great sweaters, though.
True.
But I think that is a good point. I think that's a valid point. And I think that's an interesting point because I guess that runs into the larger theme of when you come into these kind of movies with the mad scientist of consent. Because usually consent is not an option when it comes to mad scientist movies. It's like, you're gonna do this
for the name. He brought back like the cat.
Or just like, you're gonna do this in the name of science because it's good for you. You know, it's good for everybody. I don't know what else to say with that. I did feel sorry for her in the end because, again, it was like, she just wanted to go to school and have a fiance and have a life. That did not happen at all. Again, the movie kind of doesn't focus on that. We're not really identifying with her. We're identifying more towards, or at least my read into it, we're identifying more towards the, towards Wes.
Kane? Oh.
Oh.
I was thinking, I was thinking we were identifying more towards Kane because West is just like kind of questionable with his science decisions.
Maybe this is like the litmus test for like everybody. Like, make them watch this and be like, okay, who do you identify with? And then you kind of see who they are inside, because it would not be Meg for me, nor Kane.
My only thing with like what you're saying with identifying with people is Meg is, while she's not like a foreground character, she's always there. She's there throughout the entire movie. Step by step, she is involved at somehow. And so it seems really weird to just have her be a bland background character if she's always there.
Yeah, well, she's a point of obsession. That's pretty much all that she is. We'll get to it. My main point, kind of. I didn't really write down notes, so I'm going to be kind of scaling it myself. But to me, it's more of an ideology she represents than a real person. So take that as you may, for better or worse. But it was sad that she didn't get to be actualized or realized for her own interests. Or I don't think we know what she's going to school for. We don't know what her plans are. And I'm gonna say it again, because I have to keep fucking saying it in these movies, is she calls him daddy, and that's fucking gross.
Especially when you get to the daddy ripping off the clothes and handcuffing her to a table. That makes it worse.
Especially because she's in fucking college. You're yes, thank you, Bird. Yes, it's dumb. Your Bird agrees with me. It's dumb. Stop. And I apologize to people who still call, no, you know, kind of not. Don't call your dad's daddy. Ugh. But that was also another way that she was being infantilized.
I want to call my dad daddy, but that's...
But, I mean, you know what I mean? It's like, it's another way that they're making her a child, basically. She is not of her own agency. Calls him daddy. She does what her boyfriend wants her to do. You know, she doesn't really... She forgives him. So anyway, I agree. In a way, my counterpoint is that, I don't know. I didn't drink enough. That's my counterpoint. That was a good point. We get to my last point, which is kind of actually why I wanted to watch this movie again. Because the first time that I watched it, I was like, wow, okay, there's this big subtext that I see. Maybe other people see too. And then I watched it again when I was, you know, later on, and I was like, yep, still see that subtext. And the subtext is, it's not going to be a beat for beat, people, but to me it reads as an allegory or a story of being gay or gay characters. The whole thing really resonates with me as a gay story with gay characters, or one that's questioning his heterosexuality, which is when Meg kind of gets into the mix of it. I'm going to be writing an essay, everybody. Hopefully it'll be...
I hope it's recording on...
So for starters, I just want to say that West and Kane touch each other a lot in this movie. A lot, a lot. Like, casual brushes and touches and in extreme circumstances, especially like when the cat is being all reanimated and going crazy, just and throughout the whole thing, like when there's things going on, they're touching each other's shoulders, there's things like that. When it gets later on, when Kane goes into shock, we see that West puts a blanket over Kane. He's the one who's comforting Kane as Meg is off getting freaked out by her dad and cuddling
him.
Not
that kind of freak. Not that kind of freaked out.
Huh? Not that kind of freaked out?
Not that kind of freaked out, but I'm just saying because we've been talking about the dad ripping her clothes off
all
that.
No.
We should probably clarify.
Yeah, no. At this point, she doesn't know what's wrong with him. He's just, they reanimated him, but he's kind of like just acting really weird. So, but Kane collapses and West is right there to very tenderly put a blanket on him and hold him And there's just an ongoing bout of tenderness to it. So I'm going to take my pen out, talking about how he does all this sketchy shit and gets away with it, kind of a thing. I think a lot of that is because immediately I feel like Kane has an attraction to West. I don't think he understands it quite at this beginning, but he recognizes it. One of the first parts too is when, because he just has heterosexual sex with Meg, and that's when West comes to the apartment, the house, to rent it. And they open up the door, and Kane is wearing a blanket, you know, but he's shirtless, and immediately, well, he is.
I'm not meaning to laugh at you. It just cut out because it said heterosexual sex, and then it said to rent.
Sorry, we have internet problems. It's recording on my end. That's the most important thing. I guess you'll just have to listen to it. It's going to be real good. But he has a blanket across him. And as soon as he sees West, he covers up his chest, which is kind of a strange move for most men, because that's not usually a sexualized part for other men. Like, chests are whatevs, you know? So that's kind of an interesting take. Also, when you were talking about, you know, she's very against West moving in, and Kane is like on the fence about it, and West is insistent, and so Kane agrees. Even though his girlfriend / fiance is very clearly not okay with this. Same with the cat. Yes, it was a little bit of a sketchy answer. Actually, in a few other scenes, after the cat is reanimated dead and then reanimated again for the second time, when he goes to the dean, when Kane goes to the dean to talk about the reanimation, he says, "We reanimated a cat. Not even my cat, not even Rufus, not even the cat is no longer a thing of consequence to him anymore." So it becomes less and less. The things of his life are becoming less important as West is becoming more important into his life, et cetera, et cetera. Hopefully I'm going to be writing a nice little article. Hopefully it'll be accepted into what I'm going to be submitting it into, where I'm going to be taking a lot of this from. But going to the end of the movie, we see that West is wrapped up in intestine Cronenbergian craziness.
Well, I actually thought the ending was very reminiscent of Lovecraft, because this whole thing is a Lovecraft story that was, whatchamacallit, adapted. Honestly, I just thought the last 20 minutes or whatever of it was the only Lovecraftian thing I kind of got from it.
I kind of got it in the basement too, with the experimentation and stuff like that. I felt like that was pretty Lovecraftian too. But I could see that. But as he's wrapped up in this thing, again, his life work is the most important thing that he's done. He's been blackmailed, so he kills Hill over it, because it is his life's work. This is one of the most important things, if not the most important thing to him in the world. And as he's wrapped up in this Lovecraftian abomination, he throws his bag of notes and the reanimation goo and everything like that to Kane and says, "Take my notes," very easily, without hesitation, basically giving his life's work, his everything, to Kane. And again, I think it's they don't have a friendship. I think it is really centered on an attraction to one another, just as when he's talking with Meg about, like, killing her father and reanimating her and him and all that stuff. It plays off very, like, and every time, because she interrupts a lot, too. She interrupts what they're doing, what they're experimenting on and stuff like that. It's always seen as, like, this annoyance, you know, like, ugh, she just came in. But when he and she have that talk about killing, like, he's dead and you know it's true, it's kind of like a confession. It's kind of like it's his gay confession. Like, you know it's true. I can't be with you. And in the end, it feels like, too, even though he walked away from West, which he could have easily have saved him, he chose the heterosexual lifestyle, even though at the very end, it was...
Did he really, though? Because he used the reanimation juices. That's like Herbert's juices. He used them at the end. So does that really symbolize returning to the heterosexual lifestyle? Because even though you don't like the sequels, Herbert is still there. And I think Kane and Herbert, they reprise their roles as people.
They do.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this one, though.
Okay.
I ain't looking at that. I'm looking at this one. There's a chemistry between them. And honestly, I feel like it gets to a point where he's like, this is too much for me to handle. And I'm going to do the thing, the homage of what is expected of me. And then, unfortunately, that homage is not enough. She dies. So it's like, well, what am I going to do? I've sacrificed everything for this, so I might as well go that extra mile. Again, like I said, it's not a one for one. You know, like what does the goo represent? What does the headless corpse represent? Like, but I get this strong feeling like there's like, I don't think it was intentional from the director, from the writer, but it, to me, that's how it kind of felt like, and that's what it read as. And I appreciated that. It also made me sad, but I also, like I said, it resonated with me.
Yeah. I have the perfect counterpoint.
Okay. What's your perfect
counterpoint? I went to fan fiction and I put in the filters on reanimators on Herbert and Dan. And there's less than 15. There's okay. Less than 15 romance fan fiction.
Okay.
That's my counterpoint.
All right. What about in, well, for one, we all know that LGBTQ is lacking in the horror department. Holla, 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 hero. But we know it's lacking. And what we can get, it's not always the greatest. And a lot of it, especially in the 80s, a lot of it was subtext. Mm. So I think you're not going to find a lot of fanfics or a lot of culture in that way, like pop culture in that way. But just as maybe Nightmare on Elm Street 2 resonates with the LGBT group, I don't know if this does. I'm on the outskirts in my own little ocean. But I feel like it could be a movie that maybe should, if people don't already feel like that.
I will say this for the movie. I'm glad that it didn't, that your LGBT thing is with Herbert and Dan instead of Meg becoming a lesbian because she got trapped and almost raped.
Because that's usually what happens. That's how lesbians are born, right?
Yeah, they just get raped and then...
Well, at least that's what horror tells us. That's not how it is, you guys.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry that she's a terrible person that brought that up. Yes, we need more representation. On that note, there's a new movie, I haven't seen it yet, called Bit, B-I-T. I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to go watch it at some point. But it has, the lead is a trans woman. So I keep hearing really cool reviews from it. So we need more of that in general, more women, more LGBT, more Latinx, more everything, just everything. Let's all throw it in a blender, literally, because that's what horror does. Just grind it up.
There is, I'm not sure if this is what you're talking about because you cut out that entire rant, but there is one movie on Shudder that's a gay black man is the main character. But it's like a really short movie. It's like 40 minutes, maybe 30, but it's a pretty decent movie, so I was very happy. The Quiet Room.
The Quiet Room?
Yeah.
Okay, shout out to that. We are going to be going into, I mean, like, it's in June, you know, we got 1 month away before we go into Pride, so we got to get ready, everybody. But anyway, that is my point. That was your counterpoint. I guess I got to go get writing on that fan fiction.
That's right. You got to fill up these genres, man.
All right. Well, do you have anything else that you would like to add or mention to about this movie?
Yes. The names are stupid.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The one doctor. Yeah. His name Which is one? Gruber. And then we have Hill.
No, okay.
And then we have Herbert.
You didn't even say the best part of that. I'm so disappointed in you. His name is Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber.
Yes. Hans Gruber, a.k.a. Die Hard. Oh, disappointed in you. But yes, some of the names are amazing and some of them are amazing-er than others. I still like West. West! Do you have anything
figured
else?
That Cain got his name from a biblical sense. The movie is too long. I would have liked it to have been 10 minutes, but it was...
The movie was too long?
Yeah. I would have liked it to have been 10 minutes.
10 minutes? All right, now you're just being silly. Now you're just being silly. I tried to hate you, and it worked. I do.
Damn it.
So, we didn't announce last time what I was going to watch because I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to watch. Do you know what you're going to watch next time, or do you want it to be a surprise?
Ooh. Yeah, let's look over here and see what I have on my little stand thingy of actual total DVDs. Then, Boogeyman.
You know, I don't have that, but I'm willing to buy it. Are you pro or against?
I haven't seen it in forever, but I remember liking it. But I've also remember watching movies and suddenly, like, when I was younger, I thought Attack of the Sabretooth on the Sci-Fi Channel was the best movie ever, and I went back and watched it, and that CG is so bad. It is,
yeah.
It is atrocious.
They were doing the best they could. All right, you're going to have to tell me which one, because that's going to be a challenge if it's Khan. That is also a gay allegory. I'm just going to gay it up. All right, well, until next time, let's see how much I gay it up. do you got anything you want to plug?
I'm trying to think, but I don't think I did any sort of interesting articles lately, really. The last one.
Are you working on anything?
You mean that podcast thing?
Or whatever, I don't know.
I have nothing planned for the future. I'll tell you one thing, this quarantine really does great job at killing inspiration.
Oh, I've been so inspired, actually.
You suck.
I've been like throwing shit out left and right. I love it. I mean, I don't love that people are dying. I hate that. I hate that. I hate that. But I love being in my house for months on end.
I'm not in my house. I'm dealing with asshole customers.
Oh. Good luck. All right. Sorry that you have to deal with that.
Yeah, it's okay. Some of them aren't that bad, and it's just more annoyance from everything else all piling together. Stop going out. Do quarantine. Oh, my God. Or at least if you're going to go outside, practice the social distancing stuff. Don't be a little bitch about it.
Okay, I'm going to plug that too. Don't be a bitch about it. Go and practice social distancing. Wear your goddamn masks, people, okay? Yes, it helps you somewhat, but it helps other people. So quit being such selfish pricks.
Oh, it's funny because I don't wear a mask.
Stop being such a selfish prick.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right. You're a terrible person and I'm an asshole. Everybody go and tell us who won. I know it's me, but you can go ahead and tell us. And that's it for this episode. You want to say goodbye?
Bye.
All right. Goodbye.